Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Today we're going to be talking about a subject that for most people is extremely difficult to discuss. And what is that subject? It is suicide. And I have in front of me a book, Voices of Strength, Sons and Daughters of Suicide Speak Out. And our guest is Judy Fox. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you for having me.
It took a lot of courage, as far as I'm concerned, for the people to share with you their personal stories, but also you had a personal story. Now, there were two of you, Judy, you and Mia Roldan. Both of you had experienced tragedies in your family, and the two of you came together. I want my audience to know about you. You are a registered nurse and a social worker. You've been involved in psychiatric nursing. You have credentials behind you. Now, your mother committed suicide when you were just a baby, and you've got a wonderful family now. Now, Mia, she is an elementary special education teacher in Austin. You're also in Austin, Texas, and she is working towards getting her master's degree in social work. Now, her mother committed suicide when she was 12 years old. The two of you together, what I know suicide could have been a common link, but how did the two of you meet, and how did the two of you evolve to talking openly about a subject that so often is so painful for people?
Donna, we both had read the book Motherless Daughters, and they had a gathering here in Austin about concerning the book Motherless Daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I frankly was not even sure why I was going. I just knew I was looking for a way to give back. I had always wanted to write this book. I have thought about this for so long, but I went to this group not even knowing what I was getting into, and there I met Mia.
Mm-hmm.
And when we found out we had that commonality between us, she mentioned she always wanted to write a book, and I was just shocked because I had also been thinking about that since probably my late teens or early 20s. And
now, she, excuse me for interrupting you, her mother died when she was 12.
Yes.
Yours died when you were just a tiny baby.
7 weeks.
How could the two of you relate? I would say just from being aware of this, there would be such a significant difference. How, you know, you were just a tiny, tiny, tiny baby.
That's right. And I grew up under the umbrella of her suicide.
Ah, now how was that umbrella formed?
Now, of course, there are so many attitudes towards suicide. And having been born and then having my mother to die afterwards, when that happens, a child frequently does not bond with the family members, let's put it that way, do not bond so well with the child.
Mm-hmm.
They're grieving and trying to, they can't quite get excited over the birth of a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so aunts, uncles, parents, you know, my father, they weren't into the new baby in the household. So actually, as time went on, the lucky thing was that the person who took care of me for the first 3 years of my life really was a fantastic substitute mother,
mm-hmm,
for me. And
mm-hmm,
probably that's what saved me, where I learned to love and learned to be basically, quote, a normal person to some extent.
Now,
so,
your foreword of your book was written by Harry Reid, who's the 24th U.S. Senate Majority Leader.
Yes.
And I found his words very poignant because his father shot himself in 1972. And
correct,
as he relates in the foreword, this was something that he didn't even know how to relate to. He didn't know. There was no one to talk to. There was no one in the family because it was that time where you just didn't talk about things. I mean, it still goes on today where people don't talk. It is very difficult. And he said for him the breakthrough was when Mike Wallace went public about the feelings that he had gone through, and he found that there were a lot of answers that hadn't been there for him before. How did you and the Senate Majority Leader come to know each other?
Yeah, there had been an article in a California newspaper, and actually Mia's brother came upon that article. We wrote to many different survivors of parent suicide who were well known, mm-hmm, and Harry Reid was the only one who did respond back, and he responded back positively that he would do it.
Wow, that's marvelous. Now, there is a picture in your book of you and your mother, and it was,
yes,
2 days before she committed suicide. You were just,
right,
a tiny, tiny thing.
Yes.
And she looked so empty.
She was. And she,
and you know, I think today of what we are aware of postpartum, you know, depression after a baby's born, I can remember experiencing that myself and not even recognizing who I was. And a wise, wise old doctor that I had, his nurses saw it immediately, and they gave me a tranquilizer. And within 2 days, I was fine. And they,
yes,
said it scared them half to death when I walked in because of this look that I had in my eyes. And they said, uh-oh, this girl needs help. Now, that was me many years ago. So I look at your mother, and I think how much we have learned since your mother gave birth to you. But only if someone's wise enough to pay attention and to see. And your mom just didn't have the help.
No, if you note, I don't know how well you were able to see that photo, but she's not even really holding me.
Right.
I'm simply lying in her lap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And actually, now she may have had postpartum depression as well, but she was psychotically depressed. She did try to kill herself while she was pregnant with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I had a member of my own family go through something like that.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult. And I was quite young when it happened to this person. And they were not all that much older than me. And
yeah,
I was stunned to learn that this is what they had tried to do. Their husband got home in time to find their wife. She would have bled to death. So,
wow,
it, you know, these things. The reason, to me, your book is so poignant is I love the integrity of what you and Mia share and the stories that other people share, because I think when we can come out and talk about these things, like with you, you were a tiny baby. There's no blame here. But your family, the taboos that existed, imaginary taboos, you as a baby knew. And that's something that people don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
Babies know. They know. They absorb. They'll carry a feeling, maybe consciously, they're not going to know, but subconsciously, they're absorbing everything that's going on around them.
Exactly. And even up to the time I was about 9 or 10 years of age, I heard an aunt say, "What a shame Beatrice ever got pregnant. If she hadn't gotten pregnant, she would be alive today."
Mm-hmm.
And I had the ability at that time already to pretend I didn't hear any of this.
Mm-hmm. But you did hear.
Oh,
you heard
I
everyone.
Very definitely. And to this, I mean, I still can mention it to this day. I mean, it just never had left me. And so there was blame And I did ask my brother at one point, too, why he was always so mean to me. Mm-hmm. And he said, did it ever occur to you that you were born and mother died?
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated his honesty because that was about one of the most honest things he had said to me. He was only five. I never, you know,
mm-hmm.
held that against him.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mia's story. Her mother killed herself when she was 12 years old. And they had just come back from a trip to Paris. They spent holidays with her sister. And she said she can remember telling her sister that mom was going to be angry if she knew that dad was keeping us at his apartment so long before bringing us back to their house. Now, they had divorced. They'd been divorced for 3 years. And then her dad said, your mother killed herself on Christmas Day. She was alone in the house. Now, to say that to a 12-year-old is, I mean, what does a 12-year-old do with that?
What do they do? You know, they do the best they can. They shut down oftentimes with something such as that.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, Mia said she was relieved. Because things were so, her mother was bipolar and was not a controlled bipolar. She didn't get wasn't getting treatment, and so she was very explosive at times. Mia did not, she had a tough time dealing with her mother. She said it, and so she had a problem with the fact that she felt relief. And she also felt grief. And again, people weren't interested in her expressing her grief.
Well, not only that, but all of the adults around her, including a therapist that she had been going to because of the family's divorce, or the parents' divorce, I should say. But a divorce is like a death anyway.
Right.
And it's a major trauma on so many different levels. In some instances, it might not be, but for many individuals, it is. And so she was already going to a therapist, and the therapist didn't do 50 cents worth of anything.
No, that's right. And so many therapists, there are therapists enough that do not know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's why we wrote this book, not only for the survivor, but also for the therapist, the first responder, the teachers. You know, we really interviewed clergy because so many of them do not know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And we hope that they read this book as well as the survivor. And we also hope those who are thinking about suicide would read it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so often those people that are contemplating suicide really don't want to do it. They honestly do not want to do it. They're in a vacuum. That's how I will describe it. A vacuum of hopelessness, helplessness. Sometimes it is actually a chemical imbalance.
That's right.
With bipolar. Other times it's an emotional drain where they just don't know what to do. They have this sense of, I'll use the term emptiness, and all they can see is what is in front of them, and they just don't know what else to do. And I think the majority of them, this is my bias, really don't want to do it. They really don't want to do it. But sometimes there are those people that do want to check out. No matter what you try, it's not going to make any difference. And you have a story in your book by Joshua Conklin, and this is Judy's grandson. This is your grandson.
Right.
And Judy, this is quite a powerful story. Will you share it with my audience?
Yes. First of all, Joshua, I adopted his mother. I married my husband and adopted his two children. And Joshua is my grandson, my daughter's son, the daughter who I adopted. But he had been having a rough time at work. He was feeling very depressed. I did not know about any of this. He did not know that my mother took her own life. And he had attempted his own suicide. Mm-hmm. And his wife at that time noticed he was very strange and said, "What is wrong with you?" And he told her, and he took her for help. But he said he, just so many thoughts went through his head as because his parents had been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And then his father, who had adopted him, he remembered so many good things. Oh, and he was also about to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, his wife was pregnant, and he very much regretted that he almost left his child with this, you know,
mm-hmm. with his burden. It would
yes.
have been a tremendous burden. And that's
totally.
Something that many people that are considering this don't even consider, because they are, for all intents and purposes, whatever vacuum they're in, they don't
yeah.
know how to even look out for or think about anyone else and how this would affect them.
And really, Donna, many times, too, what they're wanting to do is stop the pain.
Yes, and that's a very good statement. They are in a kind of pain, mental, physical, emotional, or spiritual, and they are saying no more.
That's right.
And that is very, very hard to go through. But I remember a personal experience of my own when I was 19 years old, where I was in that kind of a vacuum. And what saved me is that I just walked. I went out, I was walking. I can remember being like a zombie, just not feeling like there was any way out. And as it turned out, I happened to stop on a street, and I don't know what clicked in my head, but I can remember stopping on that street. It was getting dark, and there was this church that had a lantern hanging on the outside of the building. And at that time, that lantern, when it was on, it signified that there was always help whenever you needed it. And I stood there as if I was in a trance. And I can remember, and I was 19 years old at the time, eventually my thinking started leveling out. But I was totally frozen to the spot, just watching that golden lantern. And that enabled me to get to the point where I started thinking. And it was the thinking, and then I knew that I had answers and I had a resolve. I could take care of things. And that was the end of it. So when I'm talking to you, I know what happened to me at 19 years of age and a particular experience I was in. So many people, you don't have all the answers. Now, you got part of an answer regarding your mother when you found a newspaper clipping in your uncle's Bible that helped
yes.
you get relieved of the burden. You realized your mother had been a pretty sick woman for a long time.
Yes, exactly. And I remember finding that article, and my uncle could not understand. He wanted it back from me,
mm-hmm.
and I knew he was going to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not return that to him. He said, "Why do you want that?" I said, it's about me. It's about my life. It's important, my own history."
Mm-hmm.
And so that was helpful. But I really worked very hard. I had to question so many people. I struggled to find out my own history, my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was well worth it.
I agree, and I also think that we underestimate children. That when
Absolutely.
There are things like this in the family that go on, we need to sit down with the kids and tell them. Now, when they're really, really, really little, they may not understand all of the words, but the older kids, this needs to be dealt with, because death is a part of life. It's not something we should run from. But when someone doesn't act like this, we need to empower the kids, not by hiding things from them. And I know in my own family, my goodness, I was an adult woman, and I asked something about one member of my family and said, "Oh, no, you don't, just don't need to know." And I thought, this is so stupid. I do, just like you said, have a right to know.
Mm-hmm.
But this person was just so upset with the actions on the part of this other individual within the family, and I thought, this is childish. I am not 9 years old, for heaven's sakes.
Yes.
But they still carry that same attitude, don't they?
They still do. They still do. Now, I think there needs to be caution in talking with someone. For instance, with my own children, they weren't going to find out about my mother's suicide mm-hmm. from anyone. They never knew my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't about really to burden them with any of that until they became adults and that I knew, you know. But also, I would not make a blanket statement that children have to be told. Now, definitely, if others are going to be found, if you know, talking about it, you
mm-hmm.
have to.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't, I would never make a blanket statement in a book. You don't know whether, what kind of health problems, what psychological condition, whether they're schizoid or their circumstances, and it has to be done so carefully that I preferred not to say that. But yes, I think definitely it has to be discussed, and you need to stay open to their discussion, that they then to leave your children feeling comfortable to come and just talk about it and
mm-hmm.
ask questions, and if you need to explore further with them.
I think that's very important. It has been my observation that when people try to shove things under the rug too much, usually if something's been announced, let's say in a community paper or what have you, inevitably someone is going to come back, and kids can be really cruel with this. If their parents talk about, gee, so-and-so's mother committed suicide, da-da-da-da-da, while the kids at
yeah.
school will all of a sudden say, nah, 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 you get mad at you, say, yeah, you're not worth anything. Your mom killed herself because she didn't want to be around you. I mean, these are things that are actually said.
Oh, yeah, and worse even, a lot of
oh,
such
yes.
things, yes.
Oh, just, I mean, just horrible things. And someone listening to this say, oh, my children would never say that. You never know with kids. Kids are not the
yeah.
kindest people in the world. So when they are doing their own head games or whatever, many times they'll pull something like this out. And if a child does not know, and if someone is not compassionate and understanding, and if they are not open, you've made a wonderful comment in that those around the child need to be able to deal with their own grief or their concerns or however the association might have been, but also to be thoughtful with children and to... And this is adolescents, too, young adults. Don't underestimate them. Do not underestimate them. That's my bias. They
That's
have
correct.
More capacity for understanding than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. And
now, with you, what was it that you felt really helped you to get over this? Now, you found the thing in your uncle's Bible. What other elements? And let's talk about Mia, too, because hers was when she was 12 years old. So
yeah.
what enabled her to finally get past the confusion? Because lots of times it's like, why would this person do this? You don't understand. You don't know why, but they've done it.
In many ways, it was maturity with her. She didn't seem to have much help at all, if any. She was even let down by her clergy at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been seeing therapists at various times, and eventually she was able
to... Are you still there?
...to work. Pardon me?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. All of a sudden you were gone.
Oh, okay. Basically, she's still, you know, when you're younger like she is, she's a bit younger than myself, it's a lifetime process of dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still working at it now and at times needs to talk things over and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, with myself, there were a couple. I did see a good therapist, eventually found one that was outstanding, which we cover in the book, as to how to find a therapist, and that it's well worth interviewing them, and we go into all of that. But also, I went back and found the nurse. My grandmother had been ill, and a nurse who was taking care of her took also, we moved in with my grandfather, and she took care of my brother and myself. This is the woman who was so
mm-hmm.
loving with me.
Mm-hmm.
And meeting her, I got a tremendous amount of information from her about my childhood, which was
wonderful. Yes, that is really special. You have a story in here about Lori, who was 23 years old when her father killed himself. And she said that one of the things that really helped her, her sister-in-law said something to her, and I'm going to quote it exactly from your book. When someone commits suicide, they take all the answers and leave you with all of the questions.
That's right.
Wow. Those are powerfully wise words.
Yes. And even we have a participant in our book that had, you know, had a parent murdered and then a suicide in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And her ability to cope and how she ended up, even though she was the youngest in her family, that she ended up being the one who dealt with her older siblings and has helped them to deal with what had happened. And she had witnessed the murder of one of her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is a hideous thing to
A hideous thing. And it's amazing that the abilities that kids have sometimes to cope.
Oh, yes. I just have seen it so many times, and I've interviewed people that have told me of the resiliency that they had for whatever reason. But youth was on their side. It wasn't against them. I like your comments that the people in the fire department and the police department, any of these social rescue environments, they need to understand this. And I think your book deals with so much. And our world is such an intense world today. We have so very, very much going on. And you have a type of list that, you know, that people, if something happens to someone in the family that is really tragic, if there is the suicide or if there is a murder, actually, because you bring the stories out here in your book, things that can be done that can help a family, help an individual to go through the process of dealing with that trauma, which I think is just absolutely wonderful. So your book has a tremendous amount of information, how one can reclaim their lives, how one can really assist others, but also insist on taking care of themselves, that they really take care of themselves.
Exactly. And at first, the survivor just survives. But eventually, they need, survival is not enough. And we try to get that across. We hope that eventually the survivor will go on to thrive. And we do give many examples of our different survivors as to how they did do this, what their thought processes were, and their tools for dealing with this.
Now, do you have a website?
Yes, we do.
What is your website?
Okay, it's www.rstories.com. Heard.com.
Now, is that just the letter R or the word R? A-R-E.
O-U-R-O-U-R-S-T-O-R-I-E-S-H-E-A-R-D.com. And we also have a blog you could go on to. It's the same thing, but then it's a slash blog. www.rstoriesheard.com/blog. And I would also like to tell you that we do have an award-winning book.
Fabulous.
We received the National 2008 Best Book Award in the category of Health, Death, and Dying with USA Book News. And we were also a finalist for 2008 Book of the Year Award in the category of self-help with Forward Magazine. Laura Schlesinger had us for the Book of the Week. And so, and
your
I believe the reason, because we really get into so much that other books on this topic. We looked through all the books we could find, and none of them dealt with it the way we did, in which we interviewed not only all 57 participants throughout the U.S., we surveyed more, but we also interviewed clergy, therapists, and a first responder.
Well, I want to say that your book, Judy, is absolutely wonderful. I know we are out of time here. For those
Thank
of you,
Donna.
Listening, oh, you're more than welcome. For those of you listening, the book's title is Voices of Strength, Sons and Daughters of Suicide Speak Out. But it is more than that. It is a book that deals with the reality of this kind of an experience from two women who have lived through it, each in their own way, as well as the story of 57 other individuals who did make contributions. Don't forget their website, OurStoriesHeard.com. That's O-U-R Stories, Heard.com. They have a blog. Judy Fox, again, thank you so much for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reigned. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I just want to let you know that if you'd like to give me a call, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We didn't have time because of having to take a break, etc., but I wanted to share something with you out of Judy's book, Voices of Strength. She said, for the persons who are left behind, I encourage them not to make a saint of the person who's died, nor should the survivors make a demon of the person either. Instead, strive to see them in all their humaneness as someone with positive traits as well as a being who had problems, issues, and weaknesses. It is important for the survivors to recognize their own strengths, how they are different from the parent who committed suicide, and I'd say any individual who committed suicide, and to strive to live their lives in a happier fashion. The survivors need to know that he or she has many more options and can live happily. And Judy's always thought that the best revenge is to live a good life. She said not that this is a matter of revenge, but let's say it's the best outcome to live beyond the suicide. And I think her words are so poignant. And my heart goes out to people that have experienced this. I have walked a journey myself that has brought me, because of being a counselor, because of interacting with so many people, who have sometimes walked that razor's edge. And like I shared with you, I walked it myself when I was 19 years old. Lots of things happen in life, but there's an old saying, when we can weather certain difficult times, it builds a resilience in us. And to learn how to think and to realize that we have options is always an ongoing challenge. But some people have more of a challenge than others. And this book is really a very good one to add to your library, and even consider giving it as a gift to a member of clergy or to someone that really doesn't understand these things. And lots of times, until you have something touch your life,
You really cannot possibly begin to fathom certain aspects of people's thinking, and maybe you'll never know. But the key is openness and honesty, thoughtful kindness, and sincerity can do a great deal to assist in healing with someone. I wanted to share a thought with you. And by the way, if you wanted to, open lines, 888-815-9756. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I wanted to share something with you by James Allen. Years ago, I found this tiny little book. It's hardbound leather. I just have no idea how old it was or how old it is because I've got it right in front of me. But someone took the time. This book is old enough where they didn't put print in the front as to the year when it was published, that type of thing. So it sort of leaves you in a questioning mode. So it had to have been put out maybe in the late 1800s, early 1900s. But James Allen is known for his thoughts about the mind. And this is a little poem that he had that he put in this one book, As a Man Thinketh. And I'm going to quote it directly. You will be what you will be. You will be what you will to be. Let failure find its false content in that poor world environment, but spirit scorns it and is free. It masters time. It conquers space. It cows that boastful trickster chance and bids the tyrant circumstance uncrown and fill a servant's place. The human will, that force unseen, the offspring of a deathless soul, can hew a way to any goal through walls of granite that intervene. Be not impatient in delay, but wait as one who understands when spirit rises and commands, the gods are ready to obey. Very powerful little poem by James Allen. Some things are timeless. Donna Sebo here. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Well, I have to tell you, I'm pretty proud of myself. I had about three major stacks of paper. Does it sound familiar? Do you have anything like this in your home or in your office? Gracious, paper. We were supposed to become a paperless society. Fat chance. I had papers that kept stacking up and stacking up. And at one time, I had them all cleaned out, and all of a sudden, here they are again. And finally, I was so proud of myself. I got busy with the shredder. I was doing so much shredding as I was going through things, and I had to do some filing, too, because some items had to be saved and had to be filed. So I was going along very nicely, and then my poor little shredder pooped out. It said, you're working me too hard, and it decided to stop. I've learned shredders have a tolerance level of just so much work. They heat up, and then they automatically turn off. That's a fun experience to go through. But what about you? Do you find you have all kinds of clutter around and you just wonder how in the world you're ever going to get through it? And if you're like me, sometimes you just sort of get mesmerized by the stacks of paper. Well, I try to keep things in order and it seems like it goes along very nicely for a while. And then after a bit, it's like it sort of sneaks up on me. And, of course, when you review as many books as I do and you have this paper and that paper and this bit of information and you have emails and you have all kinds of stuff, you turn around one day and you go, how did the monster overtake me? The paper monster. Well, I have some tips by Leslie Jacobs, who lives in Connecticut. And I've got a picture of her in front of me, and she's just a doll. She's got this wonderful cherubic type of face. And she's in her casual clothes, and she's all dressed for cleaning out clutter, and I just think she's adorable. And she said, you know what? I was in a house visiting a friend who normally is very tidy, and she was busy fixing something in the kitchen, and she said, oh, would you grab some containers for me because I've got to put some of this away. And, in fact, we've got to marinate some meat, so go into such and such cupboard, and you'll find the containers we need, and we can take care of everything we need to take care of. Well, Leslie opened up the cupboard door, and it was like one of the commercials you've seen on television. She opened the door, and everything fell out on her. She said it was a plasticware container avalanche that hit her. She's in the midst of all this. Can you imagine this in the middle of a kitchen? She's in the midst of all of this, and she goes, you know what? I think you need some help from me because you've got all of this stuff just stacked away. And her girlfriend said, oh, you're willing to help me with that? Would you take over my drawers too? Well, as it went about, she actually did decide to help her friend. And she said, they were expecting guests, so she said, I will go and I'll take care of this. You take care of what you need for your guests, and I'll help tidy things up. So she got busy, and it took her 2 hours. She got all kinds of work done, and her friend said to her, you know what? You're so good at this. I can't believe that you got all this done in 2 hours. I've tried for 2 years. I couldn't get this much done. You ought to get a job doing this. You could really help a lot of people. Well, by golly, that stayed with Leslie. She thought, I wonder if some people could use some help like this. Well, as it turned out, she found that there were people that were delighted to be able to have her come into their home and assist them in cleaning out the clutter. Now, here are some of the tips that she has. She said, if you have a lot of things, start small. And most of us, it's so easy to accumulate. It's amazing what we can accumulate. We get busy and we put this over in this corner and that over in that corner. And before you know it, you've just got buku of whatever. And this one lady that found out about her doing the service of clearing up clutter for people, this one lady said to her, when she came over to her house, she said, I just don't know what to do. And she started to cry. And Leslie asked her, why are you crying? And she said, because I just don't know where to begin. I just don't know. I look at this. It's just overwhelming. And I just close the door and I go into another part of the house. Well, she said, what we're going to do, we're just going to take a little section at a time. And we'll go through things. And we're going to set up bags. We'll have one for Goodwill. We'll have one that's trash. And we'll have one that this is what we save. So they went through this, and she found that this woman would have memories with certain things and say, oh, no, you can't get rid of that. No, you can't do that. So little by little, they went through the house, and it took Leslie a while. But eventually, they were able, within a day, to get through one room. And sometimes it takes that assistance. I know that I have a very dear friend. She was asked by a fellow coworker when she retired if she would come over to do this type of thing in her house. And my friend's name is Mary. And Mary went into this house, and she said it was absolutely astonishing. Nothing had been moved in this house. The people were literally following a path from their front door into their kitchen, into the bedroom, and a little tiny area in the den. My girlfriend said she had never seen a house like this that was floor to ceiling filled. Now, these were two people that were very intelligent. They both made very good money. They had never hired a housekeeper. But this lady told my friend, they said, you know what? I'm so embarrassed. We've lived in this house for 40 years. And Mary said, oh, my goodness. So Mary had to go in wearing masks because not even the drapes had been done. Little by little by little, it took her 6 months to go through that house. She said, I did not believe anybody could live like this. Now, the wonderful side of it was this woman was thrilled with what she was doing, but they discovered things they had forgotten they'd even had. They had pieces of ivory, wonderful carvings of bronze. They hadn't seen them for 20 years because there was so much clutter. Believe me, there are people that live like this. If you have clutter, if you don't use it, then give it away. There's someone else. If you can just take little areas at a time. And having a friend help you do this is great. One of my fellow broadcasters that I worked with for, 23 years, he was a Rat Pack packer. I mean, he wouldn't, you'd find napkins that had been used 25 years before. When he got married, his wife said, before we say I do, you are going to swear to me that you will let me do what I do, and you will never, ever look into the garbage bags that are put out by the front driveway for garbage pickup. He had to swear before they got married that he was going to do that. And the long and short of it was, she must have put out about 150 trash bags of trash.
And he said he didn't dare open them because he'd find something in there. Oh, you can't take this. You can't do that. He said he forced himself not to look at anything. And he said, you know what? We finally had our house back. It was amazing. I didn't realize I had walls. So anyway, quick tip, sort it out. Go through your mail every day. Get rid of the junk mail right away and put it in your paper or recycle bin and make sure that after a while you go even through your tax receipts, those things that you filed, check and see, you know, how long you should keep them, talk to your accountant, and get people involved in helping you do this. Kids love to do this stuff. It's really a good thing. But remember, there are so many people in this world that really are in need. And so if you have something that you really don't use, don't hesitate to give it away because someone, somewhere, we'll be able to use it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. 888-815-9756. I've got something about developing a home office. Is this really what you want to do? Well, we'll find out. Come back and we'll share some information with you. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are open if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756. Well, before I talk about developing a home office, I wanted to share with you information about a young man. His name's Ty Whitmore. He's in Kansas City, Montana. I have a photo of him in front of me, and I am just blown away. Apparently, this young man discovered a 56-pound mushroom while he was cutting some firewood. 56 pounds. I mean, that's a lot of mushroom. He was absolutely anxious to find out what kind of a fungus this was. So he picked this 56 pounds worth of mushroom up. He had to go across creeks and keep it so it wasn't going to be hit by any brush he went through until he reached a grocery store where the staff let him weigh this humongous fungus on their scale. 56 pounds. It measured 30 inches across. Wow. You know, I don't remember, maybe one of you listening know this, the largest fungi is underground. And I cannot recall if it's on the West Coast or not, but they have researched to the best of their capacity, and it's miles long. But a 56-pound
brown mushroom. I wonder what he did with it afterwards. He didn't say whether it was poisonous or whether it was edible. If it was edible, can you imagine a little bit of sherry wine with that? Just a touch of salt and pepper? Would have made for good eat. That is, if it was edible. Donna Siebel here, 888-815-9756. Let me tell you quickly who we have got on the air tomorrow. We have got world-recognized sci-fi author Bill Nolan. Now, Bill Nolan is the man that originally wrote the story, Logan's Run, that was made into a movie. Goodness, when was this? I think he made the movie, but it was made back in the 60s. And it is today a cult classic. In fact, the writing, a lot of the things about this movie, Logan's Run, my goodness, was years ahead of its time. And this is something that you often question. Where do these ideas and concepts come from? Well, we're going to be talking with Bill tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about one of the latest book that he's come out with. He's just written so much stuff. It's unbelievable. Bleeding Edge. So if you're a sci-fi person, if you really like the unique, the unusual, the bizarre, the weird, including maybe hearing something about a Twilight Zone script that was not utilized for the series, we'll be talking about that tomorrow. It's a nice way to end the week. And by the way, if you want to check on any of the shows, don't hesitate to go into bbsradio.com. Check under Station 1, The Donna Siebel Show, and you'll find a listing of my guests that are going to be coming up with a brief write-up about them. Home office. How many of you are considering doing the home office? Well, there's a lot of good in it. I've had a home office for years. I really like it. It's been very beneficial. But there are disadvantages to having a home office, too. Many times, businesses start in a garage, home office, or, you know, maybe a bedroom is turned over. I know one gal that started her business. She didn't have but a one-bedroom apartment. She designated like 4 feet square in her bedroom, and she put up a little screen, and that was her office. Her phone was there, her fax machine. She had a little tiny desk area. That was her office area. That's how she started. Eventually, she ended up with a business that had about 4 or 5 people on staff, and they relocated it. And she was, you know, into a regular office space. But there are so many, many things that you need to think of if you are wanting to have your own office. If you've got kids, you need to make sure that your office space is considered that office space, not just for tax purposes, but it needs to be left alone by members of the family. Because otherwise, you might have kids turning off your fax machine or somebody on the telephone when you don't want them on the phone. And you may want to have a separate line that is exactly for the purpose of you doing business. And there are so many people that say their closets are filled with baskets of all kinds of different things that they need in their business. Lots of times people will start out their businesses right in their living rooms and they work it from there. But they say, you know, that you have to make a change. Maybe you move to a bigger house so that you have bigger space. I know Lynn Drail, whose grandmother was an antique collector. They moved. They were living up here in Bellingham, Washington, and they started out in their own home. Well, eventually the home became the antique store, and the husband just kept adding on to the house and adding on to the house and adding on to the house, eventually adding on an area that they could live in, but the rest of it was all antiques. Now, somebody might do something like that, but you really have to be aware of something. When you have a home office, you're going to always need to remember you never have a second chance to make a first impression. So you have to ask yourself, if you're going to have people coming into your office, how do you want your place to look? What are they going to see when they walk in? Presentation is very, very important. So you've got to make sure that you don't have dirty dishes in the sink, your bathrooms are clean. That is a big one. And if there are bedrooms that are adjacent, close the doors. If you have to put something somewhere, close the door so nobody goes in there. But really think about how you do what you do. Having a home office is absolutely marvelous, but you need to remember when you start out, if you're going to have people coming into your home office, that's one thing. But if you're going to have a home office, that maybe you go out and you meet your people for business and maybe work with them at a coffee shop or something like that, that's great too. But a home office requires a whole lot of different thinking than what you'd expect. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the bizarre, the unusual, the sci-fi stuff of life with Bill Nolan. I invite you to join me. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And don't forget the Ren Fair this weekend. It's coming up. I'm excited. I hope you'll join us if you're in the state of Washington. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.